What's up, y'all? It's Zach with Living Corporate. And if you didn't know, because every week there's a new listener, right? Every day there's someone discovering Living Corporate. So I'm going to just let everybody know. And then for those who've been rocking with us for a while, I'm going to remind y'all too. Living Corporate is a digital media network, and we exist to center and amplify Black and brown people at work. That's what we do. Okay. We are the voice of the people. We're not really here to promote corporations or protect them or be some type of corporate reputational laundering service. Like, that's not what we do, right? When we have brands on to talk about Black and brown people at work, when we have executives, activists, elected officials, public servants, influencers, artists, etc., we have any of these types of people on, we're going to be centering and amplifying Black and brown experiences. And if that brand happens to do that work and really be authentic in that space, then we will speak to them. And you can best believe that when they come on the stage, on this platform, we're not pulling any punches. We're having real conversations. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is what Living Corporate is all about. I'm so excited about where Living Corporate is. I'm excited about this episode you're about to hear, this conversation you're about to hear. And, you know, I just want you to know that I love you. I appreciate you. Make sure that you follow Living Corporate everywhere we exist. You know what I'm saying? Just type in, just Google Living Corporate. I ain't about to rattle off all the social media handles. You know what I mean? Like, if you just go on Google or whatever search engine you use, because that's not an ad either. whatever you use, Ask Jeeves, Bing, Yahoo, I don't know, what, Microsoft Edge, whatever you're using, just type in Living Corporate and we're going to pop up, right? Now, look, what you're listening to is Real Talk Tuesdays. You're listening to one show that's part of a larger network, right? And so what you're gonna, if you check us out, you look at our website, living-corporatepleasethedash.com, you'll see that we actually have a network of shows, right? All focused on centering and amplifying Black and brown folks at work with different lenses, right? So shout out to the entire team. As our shows continue to come, you will hear about it, but make sure you plug in so you can just stay in tune. That way you don't have to try to catch up. You can just be caught up as you catching on. You know what I'm saying? Now, with that being said, I'm excited about this conversation you're about to hear. I want you to pay attention and make sure that you click the links in the show notes to learn more about what we're doing and where we're going. I'll see you soon. Andres, welcome. How you doing, man?
Thank you so much for having me. This is fantastic. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while now. I appreciate you reaching out and talking about these critical issues regarding the environmental sector and what's happening, right? Looking at how can we be doing better as a sector and what does it mean not only for the environmental sector moving forward, but what's it mean for those coming into the environmental sector, those young folks that may be interested or have a passion for the environment. What does it mean when they look at the current status of diversity within the environmental sector?
Look, we're going to get to all of it. I'm excited about it as well. I don't think we're having enough of these dialogues. So just like in the space, right? I think, can we start by talking about Green 2.0, like the mission, the purpose, and why diverse representation is essential to the environmental sector?
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. And, you know, with that, there's a lot, right? Just in what you just said right there. You know, in Green 2.0, as mission is to diversify the environmental sector while at the same time holding boards and leaders in the environmental space accountable. Accountable meaning, are they having best practices? Are they looking after their staff, their volunteers? Are they diversifying the leadership? Are they diversifying the board? Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have that diversity within the environmental sector, we can't move forward, Zach. Mm. It is absolutely critically important that we make sure that the environmental sector is as diverse as the folks that they're trying to help, as diverse as the communities of color, communities that are impacted by climate change and impacted by environmental catastrophes. We need to make sure that we're uplifting, we're hearing from those voices in those communities, because if we're not, we're failing. We will not move forward, Zach, until we have leaders in the environmental sector who come from those spaces, who have experienced, you know, those issues within their own communities. And one of the things that I've always said is, it's not enough to have a seat at the table, Zach. You got to have a voice, because anyone can have a seat at the table, but if you don't have a voice, you won't be heard. And if you're not heard, we can't make progress. We can't move forward together to solve the issues that are right in front of us.
Well, you know, I mean, agreed on all points. I think it's interesting, because I'd like to talk a bit about what led you to your journey in like the environmental space, and then also to be appointed as Green 2.0's first executive director.
Yeah, great question. So I grew up in West Virginia. I grew up in a very rural area, mm-hmm. where, you know, it was a great time where you'd go out with your friends and you'd go out and explore nature. And really, you know, West Virginia has so many wonderful things to offer, and you wouldn't come back until, you know, it got dark and mom wanted you home for dinner. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, really put in me a sense of loving the environment and understanding what the environment has to offer and the need for us to be able to have that, you know, have those experiences, be able to go outside, feel that passion and love for the environment. It's that led me to, you know, a career in the environmental sector. I've worked at Ocean Conservancy working on ocean issues. I've worked at Citizens Climate Lobby working on carbon pricing issues that impact us all. And an opportunity came at Green 2.0 to be the first executive director. And I thought, wow, think of all the things that I've done in my career, whether it was housing issues, whether it was immigration, you know, working on issues in the environment. It all culminated to say, let's get out there. Let's work on these critical issues that need that steady drumbeat. Because if we don't have a steady drumbeat on these issues of diversity within the environmental sector, no one will be doing that. And one of the things that often worries me is the fact that when it's not these issues, when diversity issues aren't on TV, they're not on the radio, they're not in print, people start looking at other things or forget about these issues. But these issues are constant. Hmm. And we need an organization like Green 2.0, and we need the leaders that have worked on this, my staff, our board, to continue to have that steady drumbeat that says, this may not be right in your face right now. This might not be on TV every day, but these problems still exist. These problems aren't going away. The fact that one of the things that we look at Green 2.0 is we do an annual report card, and that report card paints a very, very interesting picture, Zach. And that picture is, yes, we are doing better as an environmental sector and organizations when it comes to hiring entry-level and mid-level folks, people of color, diverse. Mm-hmm. But what happens as you climb that ladder? You know what happens, Zach? That percentage of diversity suddenly shrinks to almost zero.
Sure.
And that isn't getting better. And that's a big problem, because it's those leaders, those people at the top who shape the mission of the organization, who are the voice of an organization, those are the decision makers. And if we don't have diverse leadership, diverse voices, the issues of communities of color won't be looked at as much. Mm. We need to have leaders of color who have experienced the issues of climate change and who understand their own communities, Zach, to have a voice within the sector. And until we have that, until we do better as a sector in elevating those voices, my friend, we're stuck in a rotating, you know, in a revolving door that just won't end. And if we want to bring about change, we absolutely need to make sure that we're doing better, but we also, Zach, need to make sure that we're doing it faster. That's the problem. The change that is occurring is very slow, incremental change. We're not moving fast enough to put leaders of color into leadership positions. And one of the things we constantly see is this idea that you'll talk to an organization and they'll say, oh, it's fantastic. Diversity is a great issue. We prioritize diversity. One of the things that I tell folks, especially young people, when they come to me and they want to talk about kind of what the field looks like, I say, if you really want the story, go to their website and look at their leadership page. Because mm-hmm. a lot of organizations will talk a big talk about diversity, about how much they care, about how much they prioritize it. But then you go to their leadership and page, and it tells a much different story. And you're like, well, if you're prioritizing diversity, how come there's no one that looks like me? There's no one that looks like you on this page. Where is that action? Where is the actual change when it comes to just lip service to actually putting that into action? And that is a problem.
You know, so much of what you're describing related to representation dwindling as the higher you climb up an org chart. There's through lines there for corporate America, nonprofit, higher education. I mean, like, you know, it's just a common theme and a common problem. I'll say this, right? And I speak as someone who is not like an environmental expert, and my background is more so like in org transformation and employee and customer experience and org strategy, go-to-market strategy. So like I say, this is like kind of like a common person is, I think I'm trying to understand, Andres, like in a space where when you talk about like changes and happening fast enough, like environmental movements aren't necessarily even moving quick enough as you think about like the world and how like, you know, the world continues to get hotter. That we're seeing increased damage to the planet, to the globe. How is it that you believe that organizations should be, or like, how do you think that Green 2.0 can like continue to reinforce the message of representation in higher ranks with the sense of urgency that really matches the larger sense of urgency that we need to be having around just like sustainability? Because like that to me, it feels like really compressed right now, right? Like the idea of like, hey, we need to get representation in these higher levels because the world's on fire, metaphorically and literally. Like, what does that look like to really reinforce that message? Because I'm hearing everything you're saying about that it's not happening fast enough. Like, what do we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right. And it's a big concern. And I think it begins with two parts, right? The first part is having that accountability, which is what Green 2.0 does with its report card. It's what we've done with our pay equity pledge. It's what we reinforce when we talk to leaders, especially when there's openings. And I mean job openings within these organizations, and going to them and saying, here is an opportunity for you to do better. Here is an opportunity for you to broaden your search and make sure that you're not just looking at the same candidates when it comes to hiring. One of the biggest things is, and this happens in all the sectors, but in the environmental sector specifically, is there is a pool of candidates that employers tend to go to. Mm-hmm. And the person who is at EDF, is at WWF, is now at another organization. Okay. They need to expand the way they're looking at hiring and their hiring process. Mm-hmm. You can't just go to the same ways that you've been doing historically. And there's awesome leadership boards. There's job opportunities. Organizations need to take advantage of that. For example, Green 2.0 has a free job board, right? You hear, you know, you have Green Latinos, they have a job board. You know, Brown Girl Green has a job board. It's about expanding where you're looking for talent. And if you're looking at the same place that you historically have, you will not find change. Now, the other thing is internally. What can organizations be doing to actually do better and hold themselves accountable? And I think there's four ways that are kind of in my head right now. You know, it's hire with intention. It's make significant strides to improve retention among staff and leadership of color. It's transparent hiring and retention practices. And it's also organizations creating and implementing inclusive policies and programming to ensure staff safety and retention. And you may have heard a couple of times the word retention, the environmental sector. And again, this is not specific to the environmental sector, but in this conversation, retention is an issue. It's an issue with small, medium, and large organizations, and that's a retention issue when it comes to people of color. How are we keeping that passion, that drive, when it comes to people of color if we're not willing to promote, if we're not willing to openly say, this is how you are able to get to that next step? What's happening is people of color come in, you know, at their first job, or they come in even mid-level, and then they hit a ceiling. And that's the danger, my friend. The danger is that there is no way the organizations are not doing a good enough job of making sure that there is that next level. And so our worry is the pipeline, right? It's two part. It's one, what do people of color do when they're at mid-level and then they want to get into that leadership role and they're stuck? They can't, because everyone there does not look like them in the leadership positions, and organizations who talk a big game don't actually move people of color into those roles where they'll have decision-making, a voice. They'll be the voice of the face. They're helping shape the mission. That's a big problem. And then the second is, for young people, when they're about to enter the environmental sector, when they look at these organizations and they have a passion, they say, is there an actual place for me here? Mm. Is this a sector that's opening and welcoming and inclusive to me? Mm. Do I have a future? Can I one day become that head of communications, head scientist, VP, ED, right? And the problem is that right now they're not seeing that. And what worries me is that they'll take that passion that they have for the environment and they'll go elsewhere to a different sector because they say, this sector doesn't actually want to hear from me. Or I don't see myself in any of the leaders that are in these environmental groups. There aren't enough people of color that represent the voice or the community that I come from. So what does that mean? It's very worrisome. And one of the things Green 2.0 does is we try to partner with organizations, we try to partner with groups and say, this is critically important. You know, we have our own fellowship program. And one of the things we constantly encourage is pay your interns, pay your fellows, because that opens up more opportunities. When you don't pay your interns and when you don't pay your fellows, it really limits the kind of person who can actually apply to work for free.
Right.
So one of the things is start off right. Make sure that people want to come, that people are able to come financially.
Yeah.
And that's historically, the environmental sector has been very white. And it's been one of those, I don't have to be paid to do an internship to do this. And that really makes it so that people of color historically aren't able to have those opportunities that others have had.
You know, we're talking a lot about, and I get it, like the need for representation. I understand it ideologically. I understand it principally. Does Green in the report card that you continue to mention in this conversation, are there any examples of like, hey, when we see higher levels of representation from historically marginalized communities in leadership positions in the environmental sector, we see reduced levels of environmental harm in XYZ community. Like, are there like actual examples and use cases of, hey, this is like the rationale why, and this is why this is urgent, this is why this is important?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the tools, and we have many tools, but one of the tools is our report card. And what we found, especially here in 2023, is that the report card shows that historically marginalized communities across the board, including people of color, people with gender expansive identities, and people with disabilities, have hit the green ceiling in the environmental sector. Mm. And that's not great. Representation of people of color on the full-time staff at NGOs has shown a steady annual increase, like I mentioned earlier, but in the past year, growth has slowed for people of color at the head of NGOs with only a 0.5% increase. And then on the board front, on the board and senior staff at NGOs, we've had a 0% increase in representation since 2022. Think about that, like zero increase. We're not even doing a slow increase. We're seeing zero. What is happening? There is something here to be said and to be talked about. And that's where that accountability factor comes in. Stop talking a big game about you prioritizing diversity. The numbers don't lie. You know, it's fantastic that organizations are participating so heavily in our report card, but it's also telling a tale. And that tale is that we are not actually being an inclusive sector. We are not doing our best to make sure that people of color are represented on boards within senior staff and also, in leadership positions. And the thing that worries me, Zach, is that, it's a long-term game here, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time as the short-term, because we're seeing the impacts of climate change every day. Mm-hmm. You know, heavier winds, heavier flooding, you know, people being, you know, taken out of you know, of their homes because their homes are being destroyed.
Right.
You know, communities of color that can't just pick up and move because it was a vacation home for them.
Right.
That they are then left with food deserts. They're left with health issues because of this. We need to make sure that we are hearing from those communities on the ground. We need to make sure that we are bringing those leaders, bringing the people who have a voice, who want a voice, and hear from them about what the actual impacts are. When I came here to Green 2.0 many years ago, I kept hearing, you know, especially during congressional hearings, it was usually the same kind of person testifying, and it was always leaders, white leaders from these organizations that would say, this is what I think needs to happen. This is what I think is happening with communities of color. This is how I think climate change is impacting. I don't want to hear I think anymore, Zach. I want to hear from those communities. I want to hear from those leaders.
Yeah.
Because until we actually sit down and talk to them, how can we bring about change when the folks that are actually impacted don't have a voice?
Yeah.
And that's where Green 2.0 comes in. We're here to give a megaphone to those people that have historically not had a voice, that have historically not been at the table with a voice. If we don't do it, who will? And so the mission of Green 2.0 now more than ever really, really rings through. And it's something that we can't stop doing. As I mentioned earlier, there needs to be a steady drumbeat around these issues. And if that goes away, who is going to hold these organizations and foundations accountable? And so that's why this is such a critically important issue that we work on.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we're seeing, especially like in this moment, in moments of like global unrest, we're seeing conflicts and we're seeing conflicts in the Congo. We're seeing conflicts, and mass like inequity and harm, in Gaza. And like, what I'm noticing is there are certain environmental groups, environmental justice and the climate justice organizations who are connecting the dots between climate and environmental justice with like larger justice as a whole. Like, do you believe that the environmental sector at large, especially like the older guard, is ready to embrace like a more systems approach and view of their work in the larger ecosystem of justice and like human and civil rights?
You know, the good thing is we've had leaders who have been working on this issue for so many years. You know, they continue to work. We have new leaders that are coming up, and that makes me hopeful. We have a huge kind of surge of young people from all over the world who are saying enough's enough. We need to work on these issues. And they're finding ways, whether it's through TV or media or social media, to actually be heard. And that makes me hopeful. Now, I think one of the things that we need to make sure as we move forward is that those visions, those voices are all connected together, because we need to work on this together. We can't do it in silos. We can't do this where one person is saying this and another person is saying that. We need to make sure that as a collective, we are fighting these issues, that we're looking at environmental justice and saying, this isn't just an issue for this sector, but environmental justice is something that impacts all of us. Environmental justice impacts our health, our housing, our immigration. It impacts so many different things, and we need to realize and actually let folks know just the impacts of this. You know, historically, people thought of environmental issues as, oh, it's the air, you know, it's climate, you know, it's issues with rain, it's issues with this or that. People are finally starting to really understand that it impacts so much more than what they originally thought. You know, those folks that live near pollutants are understanding that their health is the way it is because of living near some of these factories that are they're causing pollution, that they're causing asthma, that they're causing issues around cost of housing, that they're causing issues when it comes to where people live and how they migrate throughout the country or aren't able to. It's causing issues when it comes to where, you know, where folks can find food or can't find food. So these issues is a wide range of issues that people are hopefully starting to understand that it's not just what they originally or historically thought, but it's actually something that will impact them at some point. And the good news is that climate change, for the most part now, is something that's a very household, you know, issue. You know, people talk about climate change now and they know what it means. They know how, you know, they understand it to some degree, unless you are in certain parts of the country where you can't use the word climate change. And, you know, overall, we're doing a decent message of education. We can do better.
Yeah.
We need to be working on this as a whole and as a collective. But the good news is, because, you know, we need to think positively, is there are some amazing leaders out there that are doing some great work. You look at the head of Uni Concerned Scientists. You look at Gloria Walton. You look at, you know, the work Mark Magana, Green Latinos, is doing. You know, there's a lot of great leaders out there working every day to make sure that communities of color are getting the resources they need, they have the voice that they need. What we now need to do is continue not only the external work, but really look internally and say, how can we do better? How can we bring those voices in so that they can be the leaders that are going to push these issues and this education piece into the future?
You know, it's interesting too, because you talk about, you know, when I think about environmental climate justice, I think about like just like quick stats around the fact that like Black and brown communities are typically like sometimes five to 10 degrees hotter than white affluent communities. I think about, like, of course, you think about food deserts and things of that nature, just accessibility. And then I do think about, to your point, of like how Black and brown communities are often closer to different plants that are, industrial facilities that are producing toxic waste that then not only harm the ground, but of course, like, have higher, that those communities have higher instances of cancer, right? And so, to your point of like, we historically, when I was coming up, I used to think environment was more about like, oh, like kind of like the things that we can't really see and control, or that are more esoteric, that aren't necessarily like connected to human beings. But so much of what you've described and what I just described has to do with people, like decision making, and frankly, like policy and regulation. And so I'm curious, as we think about like the future of this space and Green 2.0 and like its function and getting representation in these different, like, how viable is any of this without like some serious reimagination around regulation and policy at like the state, at the local, state, and federal levels?
It's great that you mentioned that, because there's a couple of things around that. One, the local levels is where so much action happens, right? The state level is sometimes where they're making decisions that impact the local level as well. Mm-hmm. Then you have the federal, who at times, to be quite honest, tends to stall when it comes to making big decisions, or sometimes, depending on what administration we have, could actually go backwards. Mm-hmm. And then it takes a lot of time to not just go back to where we want to be, but just go back to where we started. Mm-hmm. When you have an administration policy that pushes issues to, you know, away from being where they should be. Green 2.0, 2 years ago, sent a letter to Congress. Mm. And that letter said, those who testify in front of you should be diverse. It shouldn't be once a year where you have your DEI hearing and you bring all the leaders of color. This should happen constantly. Members of Congress should always be hearing from communities of color. They should be in front of them. It shouldn't just be a one-off checklist situation. Mm-hmm. So we put together a database of people, of experts of color from across the country,
yeah,
who said, we're willing to testify in front of Congress. We're willing to help push policy agendas in front of Congress. And it was the first ever database. So we gave it to committees that have jurisdiction in environmental issues and said, no longer should you be just looking at a small group of people to testify. Mm-hmm. We are basically doing your homework for you. We are giving you these leaders. So there are absolutely no reason for you not to have people of color coming in and talking to you that are experts in these policy fields, mm-hmm, to help shape how policy moves forward this database isn't just for Congress, but it can be used at the state level as well. There are so many experts that came out from all across the country on issues like ocean acidification, public lands, etc. The idea is, don't tell us that there aren't any experts out there, that there are no people of color who are out there who are experts in these fields who can help change or shift or look at or help work on policy. They're there. It's not that they're not there. It's that you're not looking for them or that you're being lazy and not talking to the right people. So our tool is to say, here, let us help you hear from these voices, help work on policy, help work on state, local, and federal level, because it's so critical. All those three pieces come together. And if one stalls, as I mentioned, for example, if the federal level stalls on passing regulations, we can always look at the state level. So it's important that we see where we can have wins. We won't always have and be able to push federal policy as quickly as we'd like. And in those instances, we look at the state levels and local levels to say, what can we be doing in the meantime to make sure that people of color aren't left behind, that we are making sure that we're looking at these communities, prioritizing communities of color, and figuring out how we can help them and give them the resources they need, especially when they're impacted by environmental catastrophes and climate change issues.
Look, Andre, this has been a fire conversation. I feel like I can keep here all day, but I want to respect your time. So I'll ask you this last one and we'll get out of here. So, you know, a lot of organizations right now, they're shoring up their ESG goals, and they're trying to figure out how they can show up and be effective corporate citizens from a climate and environmental perspective. I'm curious, like, if you were to give executives three points of advice as it relates to their own environment goals, as it pertains to just like and them setting them for the year, or just kind of like where to get started, like what would those three points of advice be?
I'd say make sure that the people that you're listening to within your own organization are people that understand the communities that you're trying to help. Mm-hmm. Don't go blindly into trying to create policy or change policy with actually hearing from those impacted by the policy you're trying to make or change. Mm-hmm. I think that you need to make sure that organizations need to make sure that it's not enough to create a task force, but you need to be doing things internally when it comes to recruitment, when it comes to retention, when it comes to making it open and visible how you can actually move as a person of color within the organization. Those things are critically important for organizations to understand. And third is, in your mission statement, make sure that you are highlighting the fact that you are prioritizing diversity within your own organization. When you put it in writing, Zach, it becomes something different than when you just talk about it. You and I can sit here and talk all day, or, you know, an organization can sit there and talk about how they prioritize diversity, but once it's actually put on paper, it becomes part of that, you know, once you put it into that mission, it becomes something that's very reflective of an organization or foundation. And that's critically important, that we don't just talk about things, but we actually set forward action items and make it part of our mission. So that's who we are, or who they are, as they move forward in whatever priorities they have.
Andres Jimenez, look, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming to Living Corporate today. It's been a fire conversation. Consider you a friend of the show, friend of the network. You're welcome back anytime. I'm excited about the report card. Want to make sure that we are amplifiers for y'all's amplification, you know what I'm saying? So we'll make sure any things that we need to put in the show notes so people can check out the resources that you've talked, that you've been referencing in this conversation, they'll be there. And thank you, man. I appreciate you. We look forward to talking to you again.
Zach, this is fantastic. I thank you for your time. I appreciate you too, my friend, and looking forward to hopefully, you know, future conversations and working together as well. So thank you.
For sure. Peace. And we're back. Yo, I want to thank our guests. I want to say much love to the entire Living Corporate team. Thank you for you. That's right. You listening to this right now, driving your car or on the subway or, you know what I'm saying, working out, or just listening late at night while you, you know what I'm saying, doing some work or something. Thank you for being a part of our Living Corporate community. I appreciate you. Make sure, if you haven't already, that you create a login on living-corporate.com where you can actually get all this content pushed to you based on the types of things that you want to engage and listen to. Make sure you actually go to living-corporate.com for jobs and career advice and all types of just dope content that we got on there and that we're publishing every single day. All right. Until next time, this has been Zach. I'll catch you soon. Peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.